Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast. This is a special edition with our guest, Johnny Fairplay. We have with us our controversial contestant of Survivor, also spent time on TNA and can currently be seen in various different wrestling promotions where he is still one hell of a heel. Vegas Bad Boys presents Johnny Fairplay. Make some noise. How you doing, man?
Wow, I don't think you can find me in a lot of indie things. I'm not cheap, and I don't bump. And,
okay.
What else do I know?
That's like, awesome.
Are you still I'm one like, hell of a I'm heel? Like,
yeah. I'm like a really good prostitute You know the ones that you just get to take to dinner and that's it.
Oh, that's the girlfriend experience.
Yeah, I'm a GFE.
Nice. Love it.
The finish is worthless. Nice.
So, Johnny, yeah. Let's go right into it. My first question for you is, what is it like to kiss Donnie Bonaducci? I mean, was there tongue involved? I just want to know.
Oh my god.
there was no tongue. Actually, you know what? I did Bonaducci's podcast last week.
He really?
Got a new So it was the first time we talked in a while. Like, we had I had met Bonaducci before the incident, the Fox Reality Awards. Mm-hmm. And he actually carried me around for about 45 minutes. That's
wow.
Why I kind of thought it was okay, you know, to jump on him like that, because mm-hmm. a precedent had been set. And so then there was, you know, he would admit, or he admits during the podcast last week that, you know, he was on steroids out the wazoo Red Bulls and whatever else. He was a mess. And, you know, and just, you know, was not excited to see me that evening. And and fast forward to I sue him and Fox. And during the lawsuit, he actually calls me. He's just like, hey, I know we're not supposed to be talking. you're 100% right, correct about that. And he goes, I'm doing this Hulk Hogan celebrity boxing, and they'll pay you a shitload of money to come here. And so he put me on the phone with Bischoff, and they're just like, hey, and I'm like, I'm not responding to anything that you are saying, because I feel like somehow this could mess up my lawsuit. So I was like, however, I will talk to my lawyer and see, you know, and my lawyer's like, absolutely not. No. So anyway, so we went through, it was crazy. We met with the mediator or an arbitrator or whatever. And, I got a undisclosed cash settlement from Fox and Bonaducci. And then he also put in the agreement that we had to do stand up comedy appearances together in cities.
Wow.
It was like a shitty 80s movie or not even a shitty 80s like a shitty 80s sitcom. That night of it was actually the exact night of the that afternoon of the settlement. That night was the Fox Reality Awards.
Really?
1 year later, and Fox Reality, like after I just, you know, sued them and won, they're just like, "Hey, would you like to be on the award show tonight?" And
wow.
I I was like, of course, I just sued you. Why wouldn't I want to work for you? And and they're just like, hey, you know, we're going to do a thing with you and Bonaducci, and he's going to, you know, you guys are going to kiss, and he's going to, you know, pretend to, you know, pull your tooth out, you know, or, you know, and they're like, you know, would you do this? And I was like, how much does it pay? And they're like, where do you need to be at? So anyway, I was like, actually, I would like a minute alone with Danny. And they're like, do you think you're safe? Like, yeah, I think under the circumstances, I think we're okay. And I was like, Danny, I was like, what are you thinking? He was like, I think we got him by the short hairs. I'm like, I think you can ask for whatever amount you want, and I'm going to ask for $1 more.
That's fair.
So he did, and I did. So it worked out. So yeah. So as far as the kiss, if it was the highest paid kiss I've ever had in my life.
There you go. Nice. There you go. Yeah. Sounds like GFE material to me.
I mean, you know, it's standard Thursday fare. You know.
Well, speaking of, let's might as well go to controversy right away, and keep it going. So, how is your grandma doing?
She actually passed away 2 weeks ago.
No shit. No way. Really?
Nah, I'm lying.
Oh my god. Come on.
I thought you were gonna say, nah, man, my mama dead.
So I mean, after all these years, is that still the thing that kind of follows you around, is, you know, the controversy of being the you know, one of
the dead grandma guy?
Yeah, the dead grandma guy. I mean, that's like instant heat. That's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, well, she still rides. I mean, she's still alive and kicking. She rides around town. I have a Ford Hybrid, and she has a matching Ford Hybrid. I mean, because there's nothing cooler than having a matching car as your grandmother. but my license plate says Fair, and hers says Dead G-Ma. I mean, if I leave my house and go, like, I'm recognized if I leave my house and go. I mean, like, where I live, like, in my hometown or whatever, I mean, everyone knows me anyways.
Right.
But, like, if I'm in another city, I'm recognized by at least one person. I mean, you know, typically, I mean, what people don't understand was, when I did the dead grandmother lie, that was the week that Saddam Hussein was captured. Oh, and the next day, the New York Post, the headlines read, "The most hated man in America," and there was a picture of me, and Saddam Hussein was on page 2.
Wow.
Last time I checked, I didn't kill anybody for real. He did, like a lot of people. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he lied too, but I'm pretty sure he did kill a lot of people.
Oh,
so,
man.
I mean, like, it was, like, that episode was, like, you know, as a wrestling fan, you know, you talk about ratings, you know, Monday Night ratings and, you know, stuff like that. Well,
right.
You know, there's cable ratings and there's Nielsen ratings. And Nielsen ratings, you know, of course, are exponentially higher, which is going to come into factor when WWE, you know, goes to Fox in October.
Right.
But, you know, for the Nielsen ratings, you know, I wasn't competing for the number one show of the night. You know, I was competing for the number one show of the week. And we were starting at the beginning of the season. My season of Survivor was the Pirates season. And this was fresh off the heels of Pirates of the Caribbean being the number one movie of the summer.
That's
worldwide.
Right. Yeah.
And so not for the night, but for the week, the number one show in the world was CSI, and number two was Survivor. And the week that I did the Dead Grandma Lie, we became the number one show in the world for the week, and remained the number one show until throughout the end of the season.
Oh wow, that's amazing!
So, and this is not only number one in the U.S. It's also number one in Canada, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Manila. I mean, like, I go through, I went through the airport 5 years ago in the Philippines, and people are throwing up the Johnny Fairplay sign.
Wow.
I mean, that's fucking crazy.
But that's, you know, and that's the beauty of it. I actually worked on The Apprentice in L.A., so I have a little experience on the Mark Burnett side of things. And it is, you know, I guess the fascinating thing, and I know, Street, you can probably attest to this and tell us a little bit about, you know, reality TV here in a second, because the greatest thing about it is the fact that people in, you know, Oklahoma, people in Idaho, they have no idea the manipulation of everything and how, you know, and I also worked on game shows. So if you put game shows and reality together, it's a fucking clusterfuck, because you're being directed in certain ways, you're being produced, and yet you're still competing. And it's just, it's so fucked up and so fantastical. That's why everyone gets hooked into this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Survivor, I don't think there was so, I mean, like, prior to me and all of reality television, like, I was the first bad guy that ever considered themselves a bad guy. Like prior to me, like, Richard Hatch, he was the first winner of Survivor, the naked guy. Like, you know, people were just like, you're a bad guy. Misunderstood.
Right.
You know, like a Puck from Real World San Francisco.
Yeah.
He didn't consider, like, he was just like, they're just stuck up. Like, I'm the cool one here. Like, they're not cool. I'm cool. You know, like, there were all these people that, like Jerry Manthe, she was just like, you know, you're the bitch. I'm not a, you know, like, whereas me, I went in, you know, like episode one, I'm just like, I go by the moniker Johnny Fairplay. I don't play fair. And, you know, and production's looking at each other like, what the fuck just happened? You know, and they're just like, what's your deal? I'm just like, man, my fucking heroes are Ric Flair and Roddy Piper. Like, fuck you. Let's have some fun here. And they're literally masturbating. They're just like, never, like this kid's going to give us some gold.
He's clean.
You know, so as far as, you know, manipulation, like, you know, we need to, like with me, they're just like, let him do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, you know, it's either going to work or it's not. And you know, and you know, and if it has an expiration date, you know, so be it. And it didn't. I mean, like, you know, I had people throughout this, you know, I had to change my phone number twice. I received death threats every day. 40 people sent actual shit to CBS my name on it. They're just, I'm just like, do they FedEx it? Do they next day hear it?
Oh, man.
Well, that's
but like, you know, like there was just, you know, just real hatred, you know, and I kept myself privy to, you know, to enough of it, to languish and enjoy what I like about it, you know, the pro wrestler in me, you know, but like, you know, they're just like, you know, I wish you die. I can't wait till you go home. And I'm just like, keep watching, motherfucker. I'm on every episode.
You already know.
Just like, you know, someone's dreams are coming true. And guess what? I'm on Rolex number two, motherfucker. How many days?
Well, that's like the one thing, like
for the record, the answer was they had none. They had zero
role. Yeah,
that makes sense.
I didn't know if you guys were waiting for the answer.
So no. Well, that was the one thing that Matt kind of alluded to is what I ended up noticing is, this is back when I was like 21 years old, just barely 21 years old. My friends thought it'd be a great idea. Real World was doing auditions in Las Vegas, and it's like, Rome, you're fucking crazy. Like, you do whatever the hell you want to freaking do, and so. You know, they're like, let's bring them in, let's have them do it. You know, I was like, all right, I'll try it. So we get down there and they sit us all at this table. I forget what restaurant it was, and you know, they all sit us down and we're waiting, and then all of a sudden, you know, they ask us to tell us about ourselves in a round table, and I'm like, okay. So I just kind of go off the top of my head, like, oh, I just fucking live life. I don't give a shit. And, you know, just kind of be my personality. And they were like it, and I got moved to the next round. But then after that, they were asking me to do a whole bunch of different things. And I'm young, and I'm like, I want to fucking do that. And whatever reason was, I just didn't do anything. I didn't even make it. So I started realizing, like, wow, there's really a lot of freaking manipulation that goes into there. And I had this one little freaking twerp that was next to me that totally was this calm guy, but he noticed it. And he totally was just super outrageous. And then I guess he got picked for a preliminary or anything. Is that like how they still do it today? Like, what's different with the way that they kind of filter out who they want to pick and who they don't want to pick?
I never had to experience any of that. Like, on my first season of Survivor, I was living in Los Angeles, and this is to date myself. So 2003. My buddy calls me. I'm living in Hollywood on Hollywood Boulevard, and I have an apartment, and I have a pool. And it's a Sunday afternoon. I'm poolside. It's probably 2 p.m. and I'm probably 6, maybe 7 Coors Lights in at this point.
Oh man, that's a party.
My buddy calls me up. He's just like, "Hey, do you want to go to this Von Dutch party tonight?" I'm like, "Yeah."
Von Dutch party.
Wow. And so I might have actually been
at that party with you, Johnny, to be honest.
You never know. This was in Manhattan Beach. So I was living in Hollywood. My buddy was living in Venice Beach, and he was like, "Hey," and I was just like, "Dude, I'm 7 Coors Lights in. I'm not driving anywhere." He's like, "I'll call you back." So he calls me back a couple minutes later. He goes, "You know that girl I've been talking to the last couple weeks? She lives right down the street from you." I'm like, "All right, cool." So she's in this, like, I think she had like a white Mercedes convertible. So she picks me up. We stop in Santa Monica to get some gas. So I go to the corner to have a cigarette. She's pumping gas like a woman should. I'm sitting there, and this white Volvo locks up the brakes and pulls in the gas station. She goes, "You mind if I ask you a crazy question?" I'm like, "You're hot. Why not?" She goes, "You ever watch Survivor?" I go, "No, they're a bunch of fucking losers." She goes, "I'm the casting director." I go, "That sucks for you." Wow. She goes, "You have 1 in 16 chance in $1 million. I'm like, "Whatever." She goes, "I think you'd be perfect." I go, "Tell me something I don't know, honey." She goes, "That's it. You're on."
Wow.
So I'm immediately taken to like 2 weeks. You know, I'm filling out my paperwork like the next day. And I'm at the hotel, you know, for finals, and we go to CBS, you know, to the boardroom, you know, they bring us in, and so I'm sitting in this room, and there's two of every single person in this room but me. Mm-hmm. Like, there's two people that look like Rupert, there's two people that look like Burton, there's two people that look like the other girl that looks like Krista, she's the other girl, her name was Victoria Baker. She was later on The Amazing Race with her husband, and then did Celebrity Fear Factor, and she's the girl that punched me in the stomach, and then her husband comes to her defense, and Joe Rogan gets into a fight with him, and The Miz breaks him up and all that. So, but there's two of every single character in this fucking room but me. There's only one of me. And when I go for my final thing in front of Les Moonves and all the heads of Survivor and CBS, and they're just like, you know, "Why do you think we should pick you?" And I'm like, "Because there's only one of me." I don't think you're picking two of the mullet head guy. I don't know. Maybe you are, but I like my chances. So I mean, you know, so once I did the, you know, once I did that, and I was Johnny Fairplay, from then on, it's just, you know, when you're casting a show, it's, do you want a Johnny Fairplay or not? It's not, you know, or do we choose between, like, you know, do we choose between Johnny Fairplay or Mike Boogie? I mean, you know, if you want a low budget Johnny Fairplay, sure, but I think you want the good one if you're paying for it. So now I never had to do any, I kind of fast forwarded through all that, which is cool. I mean, like,
hell,
you
yeah.
know, like, you know, I guess the other way you might appreciate it more, but I appreciate shit. I'm like, I have a checking account.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think life worked out the way it was supposed to. That's where I'm at.
And you didn't have to sleep with Les Moonves either. So
No, I would have. Well, I mean, he has a very firm handshake.
Yes. Sin City.
All right, man. So, obviously, Survivor, it was an amazing chapter for you, but we are a bit of a wrestling podcast as well, so you are no stranger to pro wrestling.
Well, hold on. I have a question. Are there other wrestling podcasts, or are you guys the only one?
We are the only wrestling podcast. No.
Sweet.
In the North.
What do you call three white guys in a room?
What do you call three white guys in a room?
A podcast.
Well, we actually only got two in the room and
and
three brothers. So you know.
I don't know about y'all, but I'm booking the rest of y'all fucking each other.
So, but obviously, you know, let's take a step back a little bit. You did some professional wrestling stuff before your appearance on Survivor. What kind of got you into the pro wrestling business? Who trained you?
I was a rat and I fucked all the boys. Oh,
there you go.
I think that's the most authentic answer that we've ever gotten.
Yeah, I often confuse my origin story with every diva.
Just Eva Marie.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
As a kid, I grew up in Danville, Virginia, and that's about 40 minutes north of Greensboro, North Carolina.
Okay.
And so as a kid, I used to go to the Greensboro Coliseum about every month. I'd go to the Roanoke Civic Center, nice. Which is about a little over an hour away. I would go to the Dorton Arena in Raleigh, and then if I wanted to see WWF, my dad would drive me to Richmond, Virginia, which was about 3 hours away.
Right.
And I started probably four or five, and I remember my dad took me to a Mid-Atlantic Wrestling NWA, Jim Crockett show or whatever. Or I guess that Mid-Atlantic. This is before Jim Crockett.
Right.
Anyway, it was Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, and my dad told me at age, four or five, root for the bad guys because the good guys are pussies.
That's true. Parenting done right.
So that's how it began. I remember seeing, probably 5 years old, going to Danville, Virginia, downtown Armory, probably like 200, 250 people, maybe. I saw Andre the Giant in a battle royal.
Wow.
Wow.
So we're talking somewhere around 79, 80, right around that time, right?
I was born in 74.
Yeah. So. That's awesome.
And you mentioned earlier you were working as an assistant, or you mentioned Roddy Piper, but you were assistant for Roddy Piper back in the day.
Yeah. About 2 years before Survivor, I was Piper's assistant for about a year.
Wow. How was that?
So I was with Roddy when they were filming XWF.
Yes.
It was crazy because XWF was run by like Brian Knobs and Greg Valentine.
Oh, right. Wow.
And the biggest stars they had, like Hogan was added like last minute. But prior to that, their two biggest names were Roddy and Sable. And right. For some reason, they felt that since Roddy and Sable were the two biggest stars and they had to run lines together, that it would only make sense that they would share a locker, a dressing room together. And as Roddy's assistant, I felt this was probably the greatest idea I had ever heard in my life.
Absolutely.
So because I would ask Sable, just like, do you need me to leave? She goes, it's not like you ain't seen it before. I was like, yeah, but I thought you had a staple right there and right there. And wow. You know, Playboy doesn't have staples. So yeah, no, it was a great gig. But But yeah, Roddy was nuts. I mean, you know, my daughter's named Piper, and it's named for the guy that was my hero as a kid, not that's necessarily awesome. The guy that I worked for in 2001.
So when was the first time that you get to see Andre the Giant live? When was the first time that you got to see Piper in person in a ring?
Probably like right around that same time. But I remember as a kid, like I loved like watching Roddy talk was what he was, yeah. He was one, like I liked the talkers. I mean, like the white bread baby faces, they you know, even as a 5-year-old, they gave a shitty promo. I mean, like when I was on Survivor, you know, and I'm the bad guy. Like, you know, I'd walk around the mall, and I'd have little kids run up to me, and they're like, "Oh my God, I love you!" And they do like, you know, the fair play fingers and all that. And their parents would come up, and they're just like, "They love you," and I'm just like, "You're a horrible parent."
Yeah.
how can you? And they're like, they don't. They see you as a cartoon, that, you know, you're so animated, and, you know, and I thought back to, you know, when I was a kid, I'm just like, you know what, I get it. Like, you know, I love Roddy, like, you know, Roddy, I didn't like the bagpipes, so he would come out, like, this is how big wrestling is in Danville, Virginia. Okay, so I live in Danville, and like, our closest, biggest city, other than North Carolina, but Virginia was, like, Lynchburg, Virginia. So that we had our ABC affiliate was WSET 13. So Friday night, the news would come on at 11 o'clock. Well, wrestling came on Friday night. They would do a 15-minute version of the news so that wrestling could start at 11:15.
Wow.
On Friday
my
night.
Kind of town.
Wow.
and my dad would let me stay up, and I remember I liked Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood, they were just amazing in the ring. But the promos, yeah. I remember Roddy Piper coming out. He would start to play the. I would run the TV and turn the volume down so I didn't hear the bagpipes. But I would just wait for that second that he was done so I could turn the volume back up and hear what he had to say.
Yeah, exactly. That's wow. And on top of that, Friday nights around that time. You're talking, you know, nothing better than the Incredible Hulk, than the Dukes of Hazzard, and then 15 minutes of news, and then wrestling. That's freaking like a dream.
There you go. That was it. I remember. I remember it taking a downward turn when it went from the Incredible Hulk to was done. Then it was Dukes of Hazzard, followed by Enos.
Yeah, it is.
And those were sad days.
So, hey, Johnny, the one thing that I find interesting about your career is that you've done Survivor and you've done wrestling. Now, there's obviously a bit of a correlation to a certain extent. What would you say, in your words, is that correlation between the two products that you found to be very interesting that people may not know?
I work better without a script.
They probably let you do it too.
Yeah, just like The Miz and anyone else in 2019, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm better on, I think. In wrestling, there's only been a couple times in which the booker has understood my character. Mm-hmm. I mean, like when I signed my TNA deal, Jeff Jarrett, Jeff flew to Los Angeles to kind of hang out with me, and he was just like, I didn't watch Survivor. Can you explain your character?
That sounds just like him.
I don't know. I'm just like, I'm a bad guy. I'm considered the smartest survivor ever. I say mean things about women because I love Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, so I'm going to have AJ Styles beat you up. I would think my character would be smart enough not to get beat up
right.
by AJ Styles. Because that's, you know.
Well, you know,
I think that's what makes a smart heel.
Right, and you're absolutely right. Because, you know, we parallel in age. And Andy was my hero as a kid. And one of the things that you're absolutely right is brilliant is that when you're that kind of character, when you're the Johnny Fairplay character, you are what you are, man, and it's you. And, like, you're smarter than everyone, and you do this, and women do that, and this is the place, and I'm from Hollywood, you know? And if you don't get that, then you totally miss the whole idea of, you know, what you're actually conveying. And I think TNA totally missed that boat because you could have been...
I don't think I conveyed anything in TNA.
Yeah, you could have been like a standout in terms of what they needed, what that redneck... Oh, boy, and I just offended a bunch of people. Sorry, guys. But, you know, that Southern audience that TNA was drawn... That's what was needed, is someone that people could be like, I hate that motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. As I said, they never understood the character to do anything with it. So it was so frustrating. I mean, all right. So I do Survivor, and I get a call from TNA. Now I take that back. Not true. I get a call from WWE. Are they WWE at the time or WBF?
Yeah, that was after bitch slapped him and made him take the name back.
Okay,
yeah.
So my manager gets a call from WWE, and they offer two different storylines. A, I can go against the Divas at WrestleMania.
Jesus.
Or B, I was going to be revealed to be Trish's sleazy boyfriend.
The whole beer that might not have been so bad. That's a horrible decision to make.
Yeah, and I think they didn't go into any, you know, great detail. I'm guessing I would have ended up with Tom Coe if I'd gone that route.
Oh,
so, anyway, it was a four-month deal. 4 months deal, $80,000. They wanted me to sign over the name Johnny Fairplay.
Oh, wow.
Fuck that.
And so then I get a call from Jeff personally calls me. And he goes, hey, it's Double J. J-E-double-F.
Double R. E. Double T.
And he was just like, have you seen any of that TNA? And I was like, a little bit. I was like, you know, I really don't like paying, you know, $10
to win
tonight to watch wrestling. But they have it free on their channel. It's called Cable. Good stuff. And it's on UPN.
Oh, UPN.
Even the Spanish speaking get to hear it.
Yeah. See
it. Good. So he was just like, he goes, we'd like to bring you in. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, who will I manage? He goes, you ain't managing. No. He goes, you're going to be the main bad guy. I was like, well, I don't really wrestle. You ain't got to wrestle.
Wow.
I was like, all right, well, this sounds pretty ominous. And I was like, what do you see, you know, my character doing? He's just like, I don't know, one bump a year, and you won't take your first bump in 6 months. And I was like, all right. I'm like, what kind of numbers? And he's just like, well, Dixie's going to call you with that. And I was like, okay, well, have Dixie call me. So Dixie calls me, and she's just like, you know, we'll give you 2 years, $300,000. And I was like, all right. And so, you know, I keep my name, and I can, any appearance or anything, like, they're just like, oh, God, yes, you can do it. So I'm like, okay. So I, the week before I'm supposed to be there, they were like, we need his contract signed. And so they're scrambling in the middle of the fucking pay-per-view. They're calling me. They're just like, hey, we need you to sign your contract. And I was just like, I'll sign it when I get down there next week. And they're like, no, we need you to sign it so we can advertise you on this week's show. And I'm like, okay. And so I'm on phone with my – I'm on conference call with my manager. And we hear – so Bob Ryder's working out the conditions of the contract. So we hear Dixie in the background. She goes, give him whatever he wants now.
Oh, man.
So my manager goes, we'll call you right back. So she goes, what do you want? And I was like, five-star hotel.
Ooh,
nice.
I want a cell phone just for their stupid interviews. Nothing else. I don't want wrestling people to have my number. I just want that phone. For that. Which made no sense because it was just a fucking burden. When I finally even needed it, it hadn't been charged for 2 months or something, whatever. Insurance.
Mm. That's okay. Smart.
I got insurance.
Yeah, very smart.
So I show up, and Jeff goes, "We ain't expect all this, but shoot, fair play. We got Access Hollywood, Inside Edition, Entertainment Tonight. They're all here." And I'm just like, yeah, I expected that. And he's like, well, what do you think about taking and spinning powerbomb from AJ Styles?
Oh, Jesus.
No big deal.
I'm like, what happened to fucking one bump a year and the first bump with me for 6 months? And this kind of feels like a case of, aren't we killing my heat night one?
Yeah, no kidding.
And he was just like, sure would look good. There's a lot of people looking. I mean, we really didn't expect all these people to be, So, in the interim of Jeff explaining this to me, I am, I'm just kind of walking around the Nashville fairgrounds, dipping my toe in the water, to what's the temperature here? And I'm learning real quick that every single person there hates my gut.
Oh,
everyone. And I'm just like, this isn't good. And so I think it's either Bruce Mitchell or Jason Powell, one of them, alerts me to the fact that OneWrestling.com, who Bob Ryder was part owner of at the time, had leaked out my contract status and how much I was making, all the perks I was getting, and everything else.
Yeah.
So everyone there hated me. So I contact my manager, and I'm just like, this is going to be the longest 2 years of my life, and I think we've made a mistake. And she was just like, well, what are they saying? I'm just like, well, they want me to take a fucking spinning power. She was like, I don't even know what that is, but the answer is no. I was like, I'm in agreement, but at the same time, I think this might be not only the worst 2 years, but the longest 2 years. I don't think I have a choice.
You didn't even have to go on a mission.
Yeah. So anyway, I took the spinning power bomb. I got a legit concussion.
Oh.
And then I show up the next week, and they have Brian Urlacher throw me over the top rope.
Oh, that's floor. Right. Yeah.
Security's supposed to catch me. They don't. My third week, Simon Diamond stomps on my hand. My fourth week, I throw a drink at AJ from the crowd. And then the fifth week, I take a Styles Clash.
Jesus.
Wow. And the sixth week, Jeff tells Dixie, I don't know what to do with him. I can't do nothing with him.
Oh, my God.
I was like, well, you can kill my heat, motherfucker. You're pretty good at that.
I don't know what to do with Johnny, but I want to put the strap back on myself.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, and... It's very interesting.
Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
Little chicken salad. Yeah. Oh, man. But, you know, it really...
30 foot from grace.
Yeah. Man. But it is really interesting because, you know, again, you know, when you said Urlacher, and I grew up in Chicago, so I'm a huge Bears fan. And I remember that moment and going, you know, it's cool to see Brian do something, you know, have a football run in, fine.
He almost lost it, like it was a huge deal because yep. he was in violation
yep.
of his NFL contract, and it's just like, motherfucker's in there with me.
Yeah.
He's in violation of a cuticle hurt.
Yeah, like if he could have
that did win best non-sports moment. He won an ESPY award.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. I mean, look at that. All the acolytes that you got going on in your life for just being, you know, a punching bag, essentially.
Being me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I know you just recently did some commentary with Matt Kuhn.
I did.
And we had
during the Brad Anderson fiasco.
Yeah.
Have you heard what the commentary was when all that was going on?
Well, this is what I want to hear because, you know, we actually, and I'm not sure when this is airing, but we did talk to Jacob. And by the time this airs, Jacob's interview will already have aired. And he couldn't, sure. you know, he couldn't go in because of legal matters and stuff into too much detail and stuff. But first of all, he is an up and comer. I love him. I liked him before even, you know, all this went down. I was aware of him. He was on my radar. And after talking to him, he's such a smart dude. He's got his head on his shoulders, right? I think he can go places. With that being said, I heard a little bit of what Kuhn said, you know, in what happened in his, you know, description of everything. But I haven't heard your story yet, and I want to hear, you know, what the Johnny Fairplay take is.
I mean, all right. All right, so I wasn't aware of, you know, any real heat or whatever going into it.
Right.
So while it's happening, like, me and Matt are like I'm asking Matt how much, like, does he think we can steal Gene Anderson's boots? How much will they go for on eBay? And if we take one, does he think we can sell them individually, or do they have to be sold as a pair? So if you're wondering what, like you know, because this is like a thing. So, like, you know, if it were, I would imagine it's never going to be released. But if it were to be released, that would be the commentary going on during that. Can we steal these boots? How much would they fetch? And can we sell them as single right boot and single left boot in two separate eBay auctions?
Oh my god! Oh,
that's the commentary.
Oh my gosh! That's
you know, because like, you know, rumor and innuendo states that, you know, everyone knew it, and I'm just like, okay, well, the commentators didn't know.
Right.
So, and anyone that's just like, you know, I heard someone say, you know, well, 40 people knew. I'm just like, well, 40 people weren't booked on the show. And
right.
if they were, that means Jacob has some pretty shitty friends, because you think someone would have said something to him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think 40 people knew. All right, here, I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I was on a Sean Waltman kids show, and I told him, I'm not known as like a promoter's guy, so I'm not sitting here going, whatever the promoter, that's not me,
right?
So, but here's what I do know. Like, Julian's gimmick, the owner of the promotion, it's RWA, Revolution Wrestling Authority. Julian's gimmick, he's kind of tacky. And I think he's pretty good at being tacky.
Yeah.
And he wears a fabulous Moolah shirt.
Yes.
He comes to the ring to Chris Benoit theme music.
Oh. You know, like they,
on Mother's Day.
Well, no, oh.
The ring announcer comes out, and he. and Chris Benoit's music comes out, and Julian the promoter comes out. This is a weekly thing or a monthly thing. I think there's a, you know, and the wrestlers in the back, like, you know, there were several wrestlers, you know, while this, like, had never been, you know, booked for an RWA show before, and they're looking at each other, they're like, is this fucking really happening?
Man.
And Bruce Mitchell goes, well, you know, Nancy Sullivan never had theme music, so if you're gonna pick, I mean, because it was Mother's Day. You guys are
nah. Oh my God, that's brilliant.
So anyway, but at the same time, you know, despite all of this, Julian's the kind of guy known for giving guys a second chance. Like, mm-hmm. that's his thing. Like he books wrestlers that people say, you know, that guy's a lost cause, don't book him. And, mm-hmm. you know, and Julian's one of those types of guys that looks for the good in people.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think people, you know, miss some of that with the tackiness.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, so, but at the same time, you know, I also believe that everyone is entitled to their opinion, and, you know, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. So, like, I know White Mike went on, and he was one of my favorite wrestlers in the indies right now. I love him. He's so much fun. So, you know, White Mike took to Facebook, and he was just like, he's like, hey, before the match started, Julian, the promoter, came up to me and said, hey, you want to watch this? This is going to be a shoot, or watch the shoot. Now, I talked to Julian, and Julian told me that he had watched the promo in the back that Brad Anderson did, and he was basically doing the same promo in the ring. And that's what Julian was talking about, like the shoot. He was talking about the promo.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. Do I believe that? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I think that, you know, could it have been something else? Yes. Like, you know, could, but I don't think, I mean, maybe I'm naive, but I just think that's what he was referring to. But I might be wrong. I mean, like, you know, because White Mike feels pretty strongly, but don't you see how it is possibly open to interpret? I mean, because, like, Julian's not a worry. He's never, I mean, he's had matches. Lord Jesus. You watch him versus the Boogie Woogie Man. If you want to see something, like,
oh, no.
Have you ever seen a slow motion match that wasn't supposed to be slow motion?
Seen a couple.
The best is Julian would attempt to do wrestling moves, and, like, he would do it. Like, he would visualize it and be like, okay. And then he would do it, and then he would be like, oh, wow, that was not even close to how I thought in my mind. And then he would try it again to the same result and go, oh, man, that was even worse. Why did I try it again? So, I mean, I mean, as I said, maybe I'm naive, maybe I'm stupid here, but Julian's kind of a promo guy. I could see Julian, like, marking out over the, you know, Brad Anderson talking about, you know, my grandpa, blah, you know, or whatever, like, you know, like, you know, because he talked, if you saw the footage, you know, it's just like, you know, my dad had me getting beat up on YMCA by the Iron Sheik. Not to shoot, he did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it happens, you know, he roughs him up and pushes him outside. So when he pushes him outside the ring, it's on the opposite side of me and Matt. So we can't see what's going on, and we're not standing up because we're professionals. I mean, you know,
right.
we we don't have fucking monitors, so, you know. So, but, you know, I've gone back and watched the footage, and one of the first people you see to get Brad off of Jacob is Julian, the promoter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And basically goes, what are you doing, you sick fuck? Like, you know, like he appears to be disgusted. So, you know, I don't know. As I said, I'm not calling, like, I don't think Mike White is wrong in that I think he believes what he's saying. I don't think he's lying because he hates Julian. You know, I think he's assembled the information that he saw and heard and made his opinion based on that. And well, you know, and I base mine on similar information, but I do see that there's a possibility to view it differently.
Well, and you know, that's very interesting too, because I think what just kind of hit me when you said that would be that I know Mike has got a great reputation and a lot of people, you know, love him and look up to him. And I think he's a, you know, one of those guys who comes off as a very, you know, well-respected and, you know, pretty straightforward guy. And I think that you're absolutely right that he might have been taken aback by those words, because I think if someone came up to you, you're backstage, and they tell you, watch this because this is going to happen, I think that Mike was I would have been the first one to, as minutes I, you know, saw, you know, one or two things going down, you know, I would have been out there in a second, like running out there going, no, fuck this, you know, and taking it into my own hands to save someone. So it could have been that shocking of, wait a minute, what the fuck is he talking about? And everything happens so quick too. It's not like it was, you know, 10 minutes of, you know, it just was like, wow. You're very right. It could just be, you know, interpretations of what you hear in the moment and then what you process, you know, that it's, you know, it's jarring. And Julian probably went through the same thing of, you know, you're right. He probably heard the promo. And, you know, probably was excited by this, because that's the other thing, too. What sick fuck would sit backstage and hear this from someone they've hired? Because now, essentially what you've done is, if you heard someone say literally to you, as a shoot, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to hurt this person, you now are liable because you've paid this guy to be out there.
There's no gain. B, the incurred liability for what? And C, and most important, and what a lot of people fail to realize, shoots are boring.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've had my ass kicked so many times in real life. Those are not entertaining fights.
No.
I promise.
Not. No. Like,
you know, especially when they're by women. Well, because they don't have technique.
It's just rage.
Oh, man. And, you know, I think the biggest question that comes out of all this is, how much would you get for one of Gene Anderson's boots?
I would like to imagine, the true answer is obviously more than Brad Anderson's payday.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that's a point of contention for people. So I go to, like, you know, so this happens, and I go to, like, you know, Matt Coon's like, Johnny, fair play, this is great. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to the back. Because I felt like that's what Bobby Heenan would do.
Yeah.
You know? So I go to the back and basically the entire locker room is just like, you're a piece of shit, you know, talking to Brad Anderson. They're like, you're a piece of shit and we're all gonna kick your fucking ass. You have basically 1 second to leave in your fucking ring gear now.
Wow.
And he does.
Wow.
He leaves in his ring gear. And, you know, he's escorted out by the police. And there was discrepancy on whether Julian gave him his money or not. And a lot of the locker room was pissed because, like, they thought they saw Julian give him money. Or they were just like, there's no way you should pay that motherfucker for what he did. You know, all that, you know. and I get that. But I do know two and now three things for a fact. At the end of the evening, Julian gave Jacob his envelope, and then he gave Jacob Brad's envelope as well.
As well, yeah.
And put extra money in one of the two of them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. As far as Brad leaving, I asked Julian if he gave Brad money, and he said that he didn't think so. However, you know, it was such chaos and such a blur and blah, right. blah, blah. He was just like, I might have.
Right.
And I found out later from Bruce Mitchell, who talked to someone, he did receive, I think it was either 20 or 40, Julian just gave him some cash out of his pocket.
Yeah.
And I understand that some of the boys had issue with that, and I'm in complete disagreement on that.
Yeah.
As a promoter, if I were in that circumstance, I would give him whatever the agreed upon fucking money was. And I would go, here you go, motherfucker. Do not look this direction again ever, as long as I'm giving you this money so that I never fucking see your unprofessional fucking ass ever again, as long as I'm alive.
Yeah.
I don't need him coming back to me for nothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that payment is not a reward for hurting Jacob or any of that shit. That payment is goodbye, good riddance. You have no reason to ever fucking contact me again.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
And this way too, you can't have Brad come back on it legally and say, hey, I was supposed to get paid. I never got paid. You know?
Yeah.
It's you're basically covering your ass by doing it. I think that's true. And, you know, again, legally, everything revolving around that is going to get settled legally anyway. So you maintain your business. And like you said, this is, hey, that's it. You're done with this territory. That's, you know, goodbye. I see you around this part again. The boys will kick your ass, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, but they got so upset. They're just like, you know, he gave me money, and I'm just like, you know, I understand why it would make you mad, but at the same time, like, why does that guy need to come back for anything? Right. He doesn't. Like, if you can guarantee that he has no reason to come back,
right.
then just close that door.
Exactly.
Like, if $20 closes that door, that's the best $20 you've ever fucking spent.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So, Simon, what you got going there?
You know, normally these guys are nice enough to, you know, let me do a segment for interviews. as you can probably tell, sometimes they don't like me talking a lot because usually the shit that comes out of my mouth is not intelligent. But with that said in mind, I have a segment called the Oh Shit Moment. Now, this is going to be a little bit different because... hearing from you, you are somebody that has a great depth of knowledge and stories of the most craziest shit ever. So I really want you to dig deep with this one. The challenge is this. Find anything in your whole career, whether it's in the ring, outside the ring, your time with doing reality TV, to where something happened to where it really, in the bottom of your core, made you say, oh shit.
Let's see. At the XWF tapings, I went out the night before the taping. So it was they filmed for 2 days. They filmed, I guess, like Saturday and Sunday or whatever. So Friday night, I go out with Mr. Perfect's driving, Valentine's in the passenger seat, and I'm in the back seat. And so we go to Ybor City to a couple of the clubs there. And as we're pulling up, this fat chick walks in front of the car. And Mr. Perfect goes, I get fucked out at home. and I go, it doesn't sound like this is perfect to me.
Wow.
So I don't know what happens later in the evening. All I know is I wake the next day. I wake up and I get a phone call from Kevin Sullivan.
Oh no!
And he is like, "It's the devil." What the fuck? And he goes, "What happened?" And I'm just like, "What do you mean? I don't know." And so I'm looking around, and like this, my alarm clock says like 9 o'clock, but like the sun's not out, and I'm just like, fuck, like how dark does it stay in fucking Florida? Like when does the sun in? And Perfect had dosed me. I missed the entire first day of tape.
What?
Oh fuck.
that was
pretty oh shit.
Definitely fucking oh shit. I mean, how did you like check yourself afterwards? You just woke up out of...
Oh, I made sure that my farts didn't hurt. Stuff like that. I felt was a pretty good game plan.
Damn.
Yeah, as long as you didn't have to go to the hospital to find out why it was hurting. Yeah.
Right. Or they had to pull something out.
Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Oh God! I hope you didn't have sex with that woman that was in front of the car.
I don't know.
You never know.
Neither one of us will know.
Bravo.
Hey, so Johnny, I got a question for you. You recently posted a picture of Jordan 4s on your Instagram, and I know your kick game is strong. Do you have a favorite pair of Jordans?
Yeah. I had the Royals, the black and royal blue ones. Those are my favorite.
Wow.
Nice. I had those when I was a kid.
Yeah, that touches my heart too,
When the Jordan 1s came out, I got the Converse Weapons. I got the Lakers Converse the Cons Weapons.
Yep, I had the same pair. Yep.
Okay. So I had those, and so the first Jordans came out, and then the second, like the red, white, and blacks came out, and then the red and blacks came out,
right.
And then the Carolina blue and whites came out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
See, I lived like 40 minutes from UNC, were the fucking shoes. Those are the shoes that everybody got.
Hell yeah.
But I waited, and the next ones were the Royals, and those are my jams.
Wow.
And so I got those, and then so when those came back, I got another pair of those last year, I think. And so I rocked those. I got the 4 breads.
Yeah,
I got the what's called. I did not get the Cactus Jacks. I tried. But truth be told, like because people ask me about my kick game all the time. Fucking Jordan 1s are about as comfortable as a pair of Chuck Taylors.
The fours
are more comfortable, but they're even heavier. So that sucks too. So like I might become a Yeezy man coming up. I'm either getting the skateboard Jordans on Saturday or I'm getting the glow in the dark Yeezys. So nice. We'll see.
There it is.
Ooh, that's a tough decision right there.
And you're also a huge collector of wax or records, as the young kids might know nowadays. What's your most coveted album?
I'm actually in my game room now. I have I'm closing in now on, I think I have 3,000 vinyl records.
Nice.
Wow.
And then I have a pair of Techniques 1200s.
Wow, nice.
And I'm DJ. I'm doing like a Bismarck Heath, like an 80s versus 90s thing.
Yep.
And I got some pretty good stuff. I went to a record show Sunday. I picked up DJ Shadow, the first introducing. I picked up an original pressing, Ghostface Supreme Clientele, Original Ooh, Pressing.
Nice.
Missy Elliott, Super Duper Fly.
Wow. Nice.
And then I got some Jimmy Castor Bunch.
Ooh.
Stevie Wonder.
Nice.
I'm on a pretty big soul kick. Like I got like Jimmy Smith and Jimmy McGriff and Groove Holmes and stuff nice. Like that. That's the Meters, you know. So just I like finding new old stuff and playing it. But you know, I mean, I listen to fucking Guns N' Roses and Queens of the Stone Age, you know, just as much. I got a crazy pick. Like I was in LA 2 weeks ago, and I got Freddie Blassie, King of Men. Album.
Yeah, yep.
And the art, like not they had the picture disc. I didn't get the. I got the original pressing.
Nice.
And where the graffiti drawn that says Blassie, King of Men. The guy that drew that is the same guy that drew all the art for the Grateful Dead stuff.
Wow. Really?
And it's like same style, but yeah, from like 1982 or whatever. It's like so funny. Like, would you ever put
seriously
and Grateful Dead in the same deal? So, but yeah, you know, awesome. It's fun. I play a few records every day. Like when I wake up, me and my 2 year old come in here and pick a record, and then at dinner I put on one. So, but
nice.
It was funny. I was at a record store in Lynchburg a couple weeks ago, and I was picking up Winger and Britney Fox, and the guy behind the counter he goes, "Have you ever looked at the lyrics for Britney Fox?" And I was like, "Not really." He goes, "They're kind of rapey." I'm like, motherfucker, I'm just like, did you see the other album is Winger?
Right, yeah.
Song
right.
Is 17.
Yeah.
She's only 17.
She's only 17.
Her daddy says she's too young, but she's old enough for me.
Awesome.
I'm like, that's statutory rapey.
Right.
Yeah.
But on that album, the I believe it's the last track, they covered Purple Haze. Oh.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's good.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
No, my favorite favorite Winger and Warrant moments were from Roller Games back
yeah.
in the day.
Wow.
they played at top Roller Games Arena with little Ralphie Valadares.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
Well, hey,
there you go. You guys. We all live the exact same lives, just in different zip codes.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
I like that.
Well, Johnny, we're going to come to an end, man, but is there anything you want to promote you got coming up or anything?
No.
Okay.
No, I have my weekly Survivor podcast. It drops every Wednesday.
Okay.
You can check that out at SurvivorNSFW.com. That stands for Survivor, not safe for work. So head on over to SurvivorNSFW.com on Wednesdays for my Survivor podcast. On Mondays, we're covering The Bachelorette. It's my first time watching that. This girl's getting around. I mean, wow. She's given Missy Hyatt a run for the
Oh, shit. I've never seen a Bachelorette show ever.
Well, now's the time. So anyway, on Monday, check that out. Same feed, SurvivorNSFW.com. And to get a Johnny Fairplay t-shirt, go to JohnnyFairplay.com.
Okay.
And when you do, I call you and thank you for your purchase.
Oh, wow.
So, and right now, through this weekend, if you enter the code word SPRING, you get 20% off. If you go to the website, it pops up and tells you to do that. So anyway, go to JohnnyFairplay.com, order a t-shirt, and get a phone call from me. And thanks.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah. Did you guys expect, I mean, like, you know, it's the fucking stupid reality guy. You didn't expect us to be this fun, did you?
Oh, that was awesome.
No, we did.
Some of us have known about you for a while. And especially, you know, like I said, I was in LA for 20 years. So while you were doing your stuff with Survivor and stuff, I was around that whole circuit of, you know, entertainment people. And I've always known that the best thing about you is that, you know, you have the same attitude of life I do. And that is, fuck it. I said it. I take responsibility. Whatever, man. I'm just having fun.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I think that, you know, that people shouldn't just look at you as, oh, that's guy's just the, you know, the dick from Survivor or whatever, the, you know, the perception is. You got kids, you know, you got, you know, a good taste in music. You know, it's like there's more to you than just being that Survivor guy. And I think that it's very important that people know that and follow you for who you are, man.
Cool. Thanks. Thank you very much. So, and shoot me a link on the Twitter machine. I will retweet. So, and everybody, check out at Johnny Fairplay on all social media, and that's where you'll find it.
Awesome.
That's what's up. All right, Johnny. Thanks.
That's what's up.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.